You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 16th of February, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to begin today by pointing something out that's been mentioned in the chat room by Okama10, a longtime member of the chat room who hails from Bulgaria. And he points out that the people that are complaining about being a part of the British Empire really just don't know that they're born. Coming from Bulgaria, they would have loved to have been ruled by the British Empire. They were ruled by the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottoman Empire kept Bulgaria in the Middle Ages. They would take slaves from families. They would murder entire villages. There was nothing done to improve the lot of the Bulgarian people. They might have maintained the roads so that they could collect their taxes, but that was about it. In the British Empire, we built schools, hospitals, infrastructure, telecommunications. And it's incredible that people today, non-whites today, are calling for reparations from the British Empire, and you don't hear anything from the Bulgarians about calling on Turkey to give them reparations. I mean, it's an absolute nonsense. But I want to get into some other articles here today. The first one comes from Britain. A group of asylum seekers being housed at the expense of the British taxpayer in a Reading hotel have staged a hunger strike, protesting against the quality of the free food they are given. And of course, these asylum seekers are fake asylum seekers. They have broken into the country from France, where there is no war, when they're supposed to claim asylum in the nearest country to where they originate from. And now they're complaining that the food is not good enough for them. Of course, we heard last week about a group of fake asylum seekers saying they wanted to go back to Europe because they weren't being treated well enough in their 3- and 4-star hotels that they are being put up in. Having a hunger strike? Who is supposed to be concerned about a hunger strike? I wonder how long it will be before they break that strike and start eating. This is quite clearly being done for the benefit of the newspapers. One of the migrants leading the strike, Salihi Lakdar, claimed that the food was unhealthy and the portions were too small, leading to some of the migrants losing weight. Well, perhaps that might be good that they're actually losing weight. They should be pleased to be given anything. I'm sure in the countries that they actually come from, with a name like Salihi Lakdar, that sounds very third worldish. To me, a lot of places in the third world, they just get by on rice. And I'm sure they're being fed more than just rice in a hotel in Britain. Lakdar, who said he has been staying in the hotel for 3 months, told Sky News, "These people have been living in the hotel for 9 months without going anywhere, without seeing any family, without seeing friends, without doing any activities. Why should the British state put on activities for these people? It's not supposed to be a holiday camp that they're on. We're not supposed to be providing entertainment for them. They are claiming asylum. They are claiming asylum from war. So long as there is no war going on around them, they should be pleased as punch. They should be eternally grateful for the fact that there is no war going on around them, not complaining that the British state hasn't put on entertainment and activities for them. And this bit here, we haven't seen any family or friends. That's the real reason for the visit. They've just come here for a holiday and to get what they can from the British state. That's the reason they're here, because they have family and friends here, not because they are claiming asylum from war. It's a huge scam. We know it's bad for everyone, for UK residents, and we respect that, and we wish them the very best, and we hope this time passes soon. But it's very bad for these people as well, he suggested. Well, why did they come here in the first place? Why didn't they go and claim asylum in the country next to where they came from? Surely that would be a more sensible idea. They would get food that they are used to there. They would be treated up to the same standards as their people expect. Surely they would get their special Muslim food, special Muslim diet. They would have their own family and friends that they lived near to, if they had stayed where they are or just went to the nearest country. Claiming that they wish the very best to the British people is a nonsense, because they're just here to take from the British people, and they broke into the country in the same way that a burglar breaks into a house seeking to steal. And that is essentially what these people have done. They've broken into Britain to see what they can steal from the British people. If that wasn't the case, then why did they not apply for asylum legally? The 24-year-old migrant claimed some in the hotel have experienced medical issues as a result of the food, alleging that many people have gone to the hospital as a result of the food. Really, they should be thanking the British people for actually allowing them to go to the hospital for free. Why should we pay for these people that break into our country? Why should we pay for their medical care? The NHS is the National Health Service. It is supposed to be for people of the British nationality, not people that have come from the other side of the world and are complaining about tummy ache. You don't go to a hospital with tummy ache, do you? And this is one of the problems that the NHS has with these newcomers. It's such a novelty for them to actually have a hospital and to actually have medical care that they will go there for all sorts of ridiculous things, like a stubbed toe or a bruised arm. And they will spend all day there, and they will complain, and they will generally make a nuisance of themselves and hold up the people that do want to get in there to see the doctors for important reasons. Lakhdar said he wants some sign from the government that their supposed plight has been heard and that their asylum claims will be progressed. So this is what's really going on here. They don't want to be in a hotel. They want to be given a house. They want to be given a council house. And they are seizing on the fact that they can complain about the food just to make some kind of scene so that they get reported on in the newspapers. And they're probably being encouraged in this by these left-wing activist journalists as well. Another unnamed migrant who is staying in the hotel with her daughter said it has been miserable. She hasn't eaten healthy food for over 5 months. No vegetables, no fresh milk, no cheese, no egg, no fish. Imagine a kid who is growing and needs all this protein and calcium. She doesn't get any of this. Well, I don't believe that, because they will be feeding these migrants with exactly whatever it is that they need. And they also get a certain allowance every week that they could go and spend on extras if they wanted. She could go and buy some fresh milk or buy some cheese or fish if that's what she is really after. And why we should be giving this money as well as putting them up, I don't know. For the first time in my whole life, I've had suicidal thoughts. And there are so many suicidal people in the same place, she added, suggesting her previous circumstances cannot have been that desperate. And that is a really good point to make there. These people are complaining that the food isn't good enough, and because the food isn't good enough, they have to have a hunger strike. And yet they're claiming that they have come from places that have been completely bombed out. They've seen horrific things. Their family have all been killed. They've seen rape. They've seen murder. And yet the portions aren't large enough is reason for them to complain and go on hunger strike and cause them to be suicidal. I mean, what does that tell you about what sort of spoilt lives they have led? If the fact that they get small portions of food in their dinner causes them to feel that they are suicidal. They should kill themselves. I mean, it just tells you that they've been spoiled absolutely rotten. I mean, these aren't the poor folk from these countries. These are the well-off ones. These are the spongers. They probably ended up stealing a lot of the money that they have had to pay to these traffickers, because they don't want to go back to the country that they've come from. The country that they've come from doesn't want them for some reason. I mean, a lot of the time it's because they are actual criminals and they're desperate to get away because they've upset a lot of people in their homeland. Clear Springs Ready Homes, a firm that services migrant detention centres, said that Clear Springs ensures that, where required, three meals a day are provided. Now, I bet one of the things that's happening here is that the meals are provided at a certain time. And if the fake asylum seekers are not there at that certain time when the meals are dished up, they're going to miss their meal. And I think that is probably more likely what is happening here. This woman with the child is not getting to the room where the meals are served on time. So she's obviously not getting enough food. The food service provided by our suppliers is reviewed on a regular basis to ensure what is provided meets the required standards, and that feedback from our asylum seekers is taken into account as part of that review. So she's basically saying that it's a lie. They are getting enough food. They are getting enough calcium. They're getting enough of everything. In July, Brexit leader Nigel Farage uncovered the fact that the government has been housing illegal migrants in hotels during the Chinese coronavirus crisis, amidst record-breaking waves of illegal boat migration. And of course, I pointed out yesterday, this is evidence that this supposed meme that was debunked that showed that Muslims were being put in houses while veterans are on streets, that has not been debunked. That is a fact. We hear that here, because Nigel Farage is the one that we can credit with exposing this scandal. Mr. Farage later embarrassed the government after revealing that one of the migrant hotels was in Home Secretary Priti Patel's own constituency. Aside from the financial cost of housing migrants, expected to total at least £4 billion over the coming years, the hotel housing scheme has also had some violent consequences. Well, who could have foreseen that? Not like we've seen these migrants carry out any violent attacks on the continent, is it, when they've been housed in hotels and in camps? In June, a Sudanese migrant went on a stabbing rampage inside his Glasgow hotel, wounding six people, including a police officer, David White, who was critically injured. The attacker, Badreddin Abadla Adam, had also reportedly complained about the free food he was provided, which sometimes consisted of spaghetti or macaroni and cheese, which was deemed not to be culturally appropriate by local activists. So we have one here who is complaining that they don't get cheese, and we have one up in Glasgow who went on a stabbing spree, stabbing six people, because he was given cheese. It doesn't matter what you do for these people, they're not going to be grateful for it. And this attacker, this Badreddin Abdullah Adam, who attacked six people and seriously wounded a police officer, he had a funeral. And at the funeral, all the blacks and non-whites from the area turned up for this funeral. There were hundreds of them that turned up cheering this guy on that had stabbed all these people. So it's not like they condemn violence either. These people are not fleeing violence. These people create violence. Migrants have long complained about the free accommodation provided to them by the British taxpayer. In September, a group of illegal Sudanese migrants complained about their housing at a converted British Army barracks, telling the media that they wished they had stayed in France. And we covered that last week, because some of them are claiming that they want to go back and they're going to have to smuggle themselves back. And of course, they won't have to smuggle themselves back. That's a nonsense. All they would have to do is just tell the government where they come from and they would like to go back. And I'm sure the government would help them on their way. Others have staged violent protests and hunger strikes at the camp. In January, a group of five asylum seekers were arrested in connection with an arson attack on the facility. And of course, there was also an arson attack on the camp in Penali, and there have been plenty of them on all the camps in Greece. These people should just be sent straight back to where they came from. The simplest solution to this, if France won't accept them back, is to hire a facility that's near to Africa or near to Turkey. You know, you could just hire an island from Greece and just put them on that island and say, you can stay there as long as you like. There's no war on that island. We'll give you your asylum claim. You can stay on this island and we will feed you. And you can stay there as long as you like until you decide that the country that you come from is no longer enough at war so that you can go back there. And that's what Australia did. Australia bought a part of Papua New Guinea, and anybody that illegally arrives in Australia is taken to this camp in Papua New Guinea, and they're welcome to stay there for as long as they like. Of course, they don't want to stay in the camp, though. But because they know they're just going to be sent to a camp, they're not actually going to be given citizenship in Britain and all the benefits that that brings, they wouldn't bother coming. They wouldn't bother trying to break into Britain if they knew that they were just going to be put in a camp in Greece. And that's the solution to this. You know, they say, well, we can't break our commitments to international law. We have to give people asylum when they request it. Well, okay, give them asylum. But give them asylum not in Britain, put them somewhere else. You could even put them somewhere in Africa that's safe in Africa. And you could say, look, we have this safe part of Sierra Leone. It is policed by British police, and you can take yourself there and you'll be safe from war. And perhaps that would prevent them even trying to make the boat journey in the first place, wouldn't it? To actually get into Europe, let alone the boat journey across the channel. And we could just take these fake asylum seekers and we could put them there in a camp in Sierra Leone. We could feed them, we could police them, and it would solve all the problems that they cause in our country. There are so many solutions to this, and it really begs the question, why do they not do that? And moving on from that to another news story that we've got here concerning Mayor Khan. Sadiq Khan has been called to resign following the release of data which showed the mayor's office paid £100,000 to a group which blockaded a police station last year. Now, this is interesting because we point out that the left and the Antifa and the anarchists, they are actually sponsored by the oligarchs. They are sponsored by the corporations. They are sponsored by the state. When they get arrested, they don't get charged. When they're put into some form of detention, they have the very best lawyers because the lawyers are all paid for by these minority advocacy groups. And what we actually have here, we have the mayor directly funding one of these groups, and he's been caught out directly funding them. How can they claim that they are against the system when they're being funded by the system? The only genuine counterculture, the only genuine alternative there is to the capitalist communist system is nationalism. According to the data, the mayor's violence reduction unit community seed fund made two payments to the Forefront project in 2018-19 and 2019-20. The group was created in 2012 in order to tackle youth violence, but became publicised after they organised a protest outside a northwest London police station following the arrest of a young man last year. The 14-year-old boy was held on suspicion of possessing cannabis in Colindale, which led to the arrest of three people following a protest outside the station. Approximately 40 people assembled outside the station where they then obstructed a police van. So three people were actually arrested from this, and it was set up and arranged by a group that are sponsored by the mayor. So the mayor is actually sponsoring the people that carry out these protests. And of course, we know the mayor supported Black Lives Matter last year, despite the fact that they were supposed to be staying in their homes and not spreading the doom virus. Prior to this incident, the project was given £50,000 in 2019 and a further £46,000 the year before, an FOI from Guido Fawkes Discovered. Commenting on the payment of money to the group, former Brexit Party MEP and chairman of Unlocked Media, Ben Habib, told express.co.uk, "The mayor must go." He said it is not just that Sadiq Khan is not doing his job. He actually holds London in contempt. He vocally supported BLM when they broke lockdown with their protest, a protest in which they defaced our national heroes. If that was not enough, they also defaced a cenotaph, a memorial to those that sacrificed their lives for this country. Now we discover he has been using public money, £100,000 no less, to support this project, an entity which blockaded a police station last year. This revelation comes hard on the heels of him launching a committee, comprising a number of his ilk, looking to bring down the statues of our great and good and change the street names. And a cost to this was a cool £250,000. The man is in gross dereliction of duty and a threat to London while the crime rates keep rising. Sadiq must go. Now, it's interesting looking at this because the mayor of London is a position that was dreamt up by Tony Blair. And it seems to me that it was deliberately done so that non-whites could take over London, so they could take over the capital city. Because it's one thing having the capital city with a majority of non-whites, but they wouldn't have been able to actually have any political influence because there was no position that was there that they could use their mass, their massive numbers, in which to get somebody in a position of influence. And that's why I think Tony Blair created this position of mayor. And it highlights the failure of democracy. If you allow groups of people to move into a place, displace the people that are there, and then you give them a position, a political position that you allow them to vote for, of course they're going to vote for somebody that represents them, which effectively means that London has been taken over by these newcomers, which is why Sadiq Khan wants to pull down all the statues and take down all the road names. And London is the capital of Britain. So much that is actually in London is part of the heritage of Great Britain. It's not unique to London. And we have this Pakistani who hates the British people, he hates white people, he hates the British Empire, and he just wants to get rid of everything that reminds him of the British people and replace it with things that remind him of himself and of his own people. And he would not be able to do that if this position of Mayor of London had not been created by Tony Blair. Now, the solution to this is just to get rid of that position. Get rid of the position of Mayor of London, and never again could we be in a position where a people that hated the rest of Britain could do so much damage to our heritage. Because that's all he does. He does damage to our heritage. He hasn't stopped the crime rate in London, which is through the roof, stabbings every day, acid attacks, and all he is concerned about is setting up units to investigate mean words on Twitter and so-called hate crimes. And that's all he's interested in. And accusing the gang's matrix of being racist because it's full of black people on there. Well, that's because the gangs are full of black people. It's not because it's racist. It's because blacks commit more crime. I mean, the solution to this, again, it's a simple solution. Get rid of the office of Mayor of London. And London is not representative of the rest of Britain, and it's far too important a place to put in the hands of people that hate the British people. Got another article here, again, which is about Sadiq Khan, and this is about his actual commission that he's got, which is looking for excuses to destroy the British people's heritage within London. A member of London Mayor Sadiq Khan's new commission, reviewing statues, street names and other memorials, once interrupted a church service to scream at the Queen and threatened to punch out security. British Nigerian activist Toyin Agbetu was already working on the BLM-inspired Review, Rename, Reclaim naming review for the municipal authorities in the London borough of Hackney. I'll just stop there. Think about that. Review, Rename, Reclaim. So he's from Nigeria, and he thinks he owns parts of Britain. He wants to look at things, rename them, and then reclaim them. Reclaim them implies that he has a prior claim. So what they're saying is that blacks and non-whites have a prior claim to Britain. He was thrust into the spotlight by his appointment to Mayor Khan's so-called Commission for Diversity in the Public Realm, which will be conducting a similar audit of statues and memorials for the entire capital. So we've already seen the damage that he's done to Hackney, and he now wants to do this to the whole of London. An investigation into the background of the commission's members, described as almost entirely left-wing political activists, campaigners and celebrities, instead of historians and experts, soon revealed Agbetu as its most controversial appointee, with the activist having made headlines in 2007 when he interrupted a Westminster Abbey service commemorating 200 years since Britain's abolition of the slave trade to shout at the Queen. Incredible, isn't it? Britain, the only country in the entire history of the world to get rid of the slave trade and ensure that it was got rid of throughout the world. And at a celebration of that, he chooses to attack the Queen. "You should be ashamed," he screams in video footage of the incident unearthed by the Guido Fawkes blog, as he is ushered away by security personnel and clergymen, jabbing his finger in the face of one guard, who happens to be black, and threatening, "I'll punch you out." Sounds just right, isn't it? Just the sort of person you want to be investigating British history and saying what needs to be pulled out and what needs to be replaced. Writing in the Socialist Review shortly after the stunt, Agbetu condemned Britain's commemoration of its historic abolition of the slave trade as not only an act of astonishing arrogance from the British church, monarchy and government, but an orgy of hypocritical moral profligacy where they neglected to apologise or reparate. Apologise for what? Who was it that was actually selling the African slaves? It was Africans, wasn't it? It wasn't white people that were selling African slaves in Africa. It was African people who were selling African slaves. A spokesman for Mayor Khan's office has defended Agbetu's appointment to the Statues Commission, however, saying that the teaching assistant was chosen for his significant expertise, knowledge and experience as a social rights activist and in setting up Legali, which challenges the misrepresentation of African people and culture in the media. So he has been chosen for being a social rights activist. He hasn't been chosen for any of his understanding of history, any of his knowledge of history. He's just been chosen because he's most likely to have a chip on his shoulder against white people. A recent example of his experience includes attending a protest against the statue of Sir Robert Jeffrey, a former Lord Mayor of London and philanthropist, born in the 1600s, and shouting, "Jeffrey must fall," through a megaphone. Some may question whether his valuable contribution to the question of what should be done with historic memorials is a foregone conclusion. Of course it is. It is exactly the same as when they appointed Doreen Lawrence to lead a commission looking into why black people were more likely to get COVID. She had no medical expertise. The only reason she was leading that investigation is because it was a foregone conclusion that she was going to blame white people for it. And she would say that it was racism that caused this. And you got exactly the same thing here. This Agbetu has only been chosen because he will try to pull down the maximum number of monuments to British people. Because that's what this is about. It's about replacing white people. And once they've finished with the monuments, they'll come for the white people ourselves. They've already displaced us in London. 60% of white Londoners have already had to move out of London because they can't live alongside these other races. They can't handle the violence, the threats, the anti-white behaviour, and the danger of their family interbreeding with them and no longer having any descendants that look like them. And it's an existential threat that we are actually facing here. And instead of facing up to that, our government is creating political posts so that when our cities do get taken over by these non-whites, that they can then start having a say in the administration of the city as well. That's the way to solve this problem of this demented Khan wishing to destroy Britain's heritage. They need to just get rid of this post of Mayor of London. Otherwise, we're just going to see the end of British heritage as we know it in our capital city. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.